On Talk 1300.
And welcome back to the State Capitol. We're very, very pleased to be joined by Governor Andrew Cuomo, who's had a terrific interview of virtually all commentators' legislative session. A lot more to do down the road. Good morning, Governor. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning. Good to be with you, Frederick. Top of the morning.
Great to have you. Are you all set for a gentle colloquy?
Oh, you know, I saw that gentle. Yeah, that's the first word that comes to my mind when I'm thinking of you is gentle.
Yeah, many people have that reaction. That was a reference to a New York Times piece a couple of days ago that sought to assess why the governor was so successful this year. They conceded that, but then they went on to be very critical and claimed that, among other things, he really didn't speak to people, except occasionally he would appear on or give interviews, except occasionally he'd appear on a radio show for a gentle colloquy. I don't mind the word colloquy. I think that's appropriate. But I think if they consider serious questions in a civil manner and a lengthy discussion about serious issues to be gentle, that's an interesting redefinition of the word in my judgment, because there's nothing soft, it seems to me, about the interview that I've been having with you occasionally. And I think you would agree with that, as you just suggested in your description of me as being something maybe other than gentle.
It's all a redefinition, Fred. It was a redefinition of my campaign, because it wasn't the campaign that I participated in. Redefinition now for you, your rest of your career, you'll be known as the gentle Fred Dickens.
Well, you know, but they themselves had an article, as you know, about me a few months ago, in which they purported, or they alleged, that you had once described me as a caged animal. So which is it? Is it gentle or a caged animal?
It's a gentle caged animal.
You know, by the way, in that piece, they talked about your having, I'm quoting from it now, having led the government for the past 6 months with far more secrecy than did other recent governors. Firstly, I would note, and I would compliment you for opening up the Hall of Governors and the governor's office on the second floor, one of the first things you did, cutting a ribbon to let the public and the press back there. It's allowed the press to do something that neither Governors Pataki, Patterson, or Spitzer did, actually walk on the second floor, see senior aides to the governor, have a chance to interview people, and not be humiliated by being kept out in the hallway when the governor would hold a press conference informally downstairs. And secondly, I would just note, what did they think Elliot Spitzer was doing in Troopergate, or when he was privately threatening Jim Todisco that he was an effing steamroller, or threatening Joe Bruno with knocking him down, I gather, or there was something almost like that that went on? And just finally, and I'll stop with this, but let me just note something else. What did they think Governor David Patterson was doing when he sprung an $8 billion set of tax hikes on the people of New York totally out of the blue, with no indication at all what was going on in those negotiations over the budget? They made it sound like you were the only one who's actually conducted serious negotiations in private, when in fact any real achievement from what I've seen in government always involves private conversations, and when they've been held in public, like those public leaders meetings that have been held over the years, they invariably broke down into a kind of a puppet show or a dog and pony show where no serious negotiations were accomplished.
Yeah, no, look, Fred, obviously there's no factual basis. Frankly, there's no factual basis to call you gentle. There's no factual basis to say that the discussions were secretive. I was probably unprecedented in the amount of communication with the people of this state. My whole point, both in the campaign and in the government, was to get out of Albany, to the extent it's in Albany, get the people involved in Albany, and to get the people involved in Albany, go to where the people are. That whole budget that we did, I was all over the state with all sorts of budget seminars and reaching out to the community. They call them the dog and pony shows, the slide shows, every community with the legislators, getting people involved, hundreds of thousands of emails, letters, videos. I can understand why the Albany-based establishment that's not getting fed and communicated with intensely could say, well, you know, they considered it secret, but going to the people is not secretive. Going to the people is democracy.
Well, from what I saw, you spent more time in Albany than did Patterson, Spitzer, or Pataki, so I didn't even have the view that you attribute to Albany insiders or maybe some of the journalists. But let's move on, if we could, Governor. Appointed a job in the executive chamber, Larry Schwartz. He had served that role for David Patterson. I'm sure he's very thrilled about this. It's quite an honor to come back again. And you're losing Steve Cohen, who'd been with you for several years.
Yeah, well, Steve is a friend for many, many years. Steve was an intern for the Mario Cuomo governor campaign or administration. That's when he must have been in college at the time. That's how far back we go. He came to the Attorney General's office when I first started. He's been invaluable. He's a great friend. He's got great judgment. He was only supposed to stay 2 years, I think. And then I persuaded him to stay longer at the AG's office, and then came to this, Albany, to the state government, for basically to help me continue the transition through the first session. And he's going to get back to his legal career and his family. And, you know, public service nowadays, Fred, it is such a financial sacrifice for family.
Right.
Not just Steve, he has a young family. And he can make a lot more money in the private sector, and he needs to make the money. So it's unfortunate that people have to feel that pressure. Larry has been extraordinary. I've known him for many years. I've worked with him in the past. But he basically handled the budget and the legislative session with the Assembly and the Senate. He really was extraordinary in what he did.
He's a former chief of staff to the Westchester County Executive and at one time the Suffolk County Executive. Is that right?
Worked in for Pat Halpin when he was county executive in Suffolk. He worked for Andy Spano, so he really gets county government, local government. He worked for Mario Cuomo in the '94 campaign, also, by the way.
Well,
I was in Washington at the time.
So he's responsible for losing that one, is that it?
That's my story. It's like whenever I want to give him a little guilt. Oh, whenever we have a disagreement, I bring up the '94 campaign. But he's really was extraordinary, and he's going to be great. I hadn't had a chance to work with him as intensely as I had over these past few months. But watching him operate, you know, we wouldn't have had the success that we had without him. So it's all good.
And I see you just named a new Medicaid Inspector General, James Cox, a few minutes ago. Is that right? Does that represent anything of transcendent significance?
No, but he has great credentials on the federal side. And my theory all along, Fred, was we're going to be able to attract better talent as the credibility of the administration and state government improves. You know, when I started in January and I would invite people to come to Albany to join the state government, they would almost laugh, frankly. You don't underestimate the damage done by these years of stories about the dysfunction of Albany. Nobody wanted to go join Albany.
Yep.
It's been getting steadily better. And I think that's reflected in the appointment of Mr. Cox today. But I think you're going to see more and more, as the credibility improves, as people believe they can make a difference and it's a place to be, you'll get better talent.
Governor, what do you make of the economic news out today from Washington? It's certainly not very good. Unemployment up. Now it's at 9.2%. The stock market is responding to that, of course. I mean, the federal government has spent over $1 trillion in stimulus money, and things in the view of a great many people, not everyone, but a great many, seem to be getting worse. There's a Siena College survey out today on consumer attitudes in New York. It's still very grim. A great deal of pessimism is certainly upstate. And there was an interesting column a couple of days ago in the Daily News by Andrea Tintaros that contrasted what she said, and she's a Republican and a self-described Republican conservative. She said that you've been very successful in Albany, not just achieving what it is you've been seeking to achieve, but in improving government and showing it works, notwithstanding the fact that a lot of people didn't think Albany works. And she contrasted that, though, with President Obama in Washington saying things aren't working well down there and that the president really should take some lessons from you. Putting that part aside, what do you make of what's going on with the national economy and President Obama's national economic policies?
Well, two things. One, Fred, since session is over and I've been, quote-unquote, out of Albany, I was in Long Island. I've moved around quite a bit. I've been benefits in Long Island, Westchester, Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse. I've been in Manhattan quite a bit. The people really, the story of success, if you will, in Albany has really communicated to people. And people really do get the basic message that Albany was different, the state government was different, it worked, we accomplished something. Even though they don't know exactly what, frankly, they just have a sense that the government worked, and they're pleased. And I believe that has positive consequences that we don't even understand. That does go to consumer confidence. That does go to belief in the state. That does go to locational decisions, whether or not you're going to move or stay. That does go to decisions about whether or not you put a renovation, you renovate your home. So does that, and frankly, I was struck by almost the universal sense that this was a very good period in Albany and it was different. So much so that we have to be careful that we don't over-calibrate. You know, I don't think that we are, we're not bumping up against utopia either, right? We had one good session, but we have a lot more to do.
Right.
And next year is another year. But so I think that's very good. What we can do, and we're now going to be turning towards focusing on jobs, economic development, and that's going to be the next phase for my administration. We were focused on the legislative session. Now we're going to be much more focused on operational initiatives around economic development. We're going to be starting the New York Open for Business campaign, the regional economic councils, the economic competitive grants, and putting a lot of energy and a whole different approach to state government, by the way,
right,
on how these agencies operate. We're going to get them out of Albany, into communities, a totally different empowerment focus that I'm going to be explaining to you guys shortly that I'm very excited about. And we've been working on for some time.
What about your view of federal policy, though? I mean, the president has been increasing federal spending to try to stimulate the economy. He's wanted higher taxes. You've been cutting spending and cutting taxes, or at least not allowing that so-called millionaire's tax to be continued. What do you think of the federal government's, the president's economic policies over the last 2.5 years?
Yeah, here's the basic point. Nobody is happy with the state of the economy, and the president says that first and foremost. But when we go back, Fred, and we say, well, we shouldn't have done what we did, the stimulus money, the bank money that Obama expended. We shouldn't have done that. Even with the advantage of hindsight, nobody can say that Obama wasn't right. When he came in, Fred, we were on the edge of the economic abyss. They were talking about another depression. They were talking about a Wall Street collapse. They were talking about people running to ATMs to take cash out of the ATM because they were afraid banks may collapse. That's where he was. And they did everything they could to bring us back from the abyss, and they did. And you can't find any economist who will stand up and say it was a mistake, it shouldn't have been done.
I think you can.
Or what would have happened if we didn't do it, Fred? Nobody
right.
knows. Now we want to say, well, we're not happy with where we are today. And by the way, the president would agree, 9.2% unemployment. They also revised the number of jobs they believe were created last month down,
yes.
So, but the president never said this was going to be a fast turnaround. Everyone said this was going to be a long climb up. You know, we had a period of overspending and overindulgence, and that this was going to be a long period of recovery. So I know they're working on it. I listened to Gene Sperling on TV last night.
Former Cuomo administration, Mario Cuomo administration figure.
Former Mario Cuomo
right.
speechwriter, friend of mine. He was then, we worked together in the Clinton administration very closely. He was under Bob Rubin first and then became the economic advisor to the president. Very, very bright guy. And he was very candid, surprisingly candid in his assessment, and basically said what I just said. We believe we did the right thing, and nobody can really tell you different. And we need to do better than we're doing now, and it's not going to be fast or easy. And he also said, look, this is a much more difficult position than the Clinton administration inherited. And that's true, too.
Just two quick things. One is an interesting op-ed piece in the New York Post today by a well-known economist saying that if you look at the way Canada responded to the worldwide recession that started in 2008, Canada didn't increase spending at the levels that America did and didn't do some of the other things that President Obama did. And Canada's unemployment rate is better than New York. They've had a better record. They actually cut taxes and stimulated business. So there are other views out there. I would just note that. You would agree that the president has to see a turnaround in the economy by this time next year if he's going to be a strong contender for re-election, do you not?
Yeah, first, Fred, our situation was different than Canada. We had a rampant fear. We had investment banks collapsed. No one knew what was going to happen. We had never been there before. So it wasn't just an economic cycle. It was a lack of trust in the fundamental financial structures of this country. That was frightening everyone.
No question.
So I believe the economy is coming back. We can say there are fits and starts, but I believe basically it's coming back. And I think you're going to continue to see it improve. But there's no doubt that how the economy is doing is going to be a major factor in the presidential campaign. Sure.
Fair enough. Governor, there's a lot of anxiety in the state workforce, as I'm sure you know, especially amongst members of the Public Employees Federation over the layoff notices that have gone out to, I guess, to about 320 or so people yesterday. And last week there were some that went out. And many people are putting this in the context of the CSEA tentative agreement, saying this is the Cuomo administration just applying more pressure to PEF members in the hope that the PEF members will put pressure on the leadership to reach an agreement. What's going on with these layoff notices? And is it part of an effort, a negotiating effort, to get a settlement with the Public Employees Federation?
Fred, from January, I took a very deliberate tack all across the board. I happened to become governor of the state at a very, very difficult time for the state. And I've always laid out options. Option A, option B, option C. Here are the options. And these are the choices. And here's what's going to happen if. I did that with the legislature. This is how we get a budget done. This is what happens on ethics. This is what happens. And I said, on the situation with the state workforce, we need $450 million in savings to make the budget work. We can get $450 million by either working with the workforce and coming up with savings and renegotiating a contract, or we're going to have to do layoffs. I have been 100% consistent in that. CSEA came to the table in good faith. I applaud them. I think our people operated in good faith, but CSEA did also. And we came up with an arrangement that is fair to both sides, and I applaud them. Our side was creative and did everything they could because no one wants to see anyone laid off, right? We need our workforce and the human cost of a layoff. And CSEA, we have a contract that I think is fair to both sides and it's going for ratification. We've made the same offer to PEF. It's up to them. It's up to them. Nothing has changed, Fred.
Are these notices, though, part of the strategy to try to, not coerce them necessarily, but pressure them, maybe into reaching an agreement?
If anything, I think the pressure that is on them is CSEA, which is a very powerful, smart union. They've been very critical of me, as you know. Danny Donahue had some choice words for me at times throughout. They negotiated a contract. We're offering basically the same contract to PEF, right?
And Ken Brennan has had some tough words for you, too, but hasn't been flexible the way Danny Donahue has been. Is that the point?
Well, all I'm saying is CSEA accepted the contract. It's right. The same basic offer to PEF. It's up to them. But if they want to say, well, it's an unreasonable offer by me, I think that lacks credibility by CSEA's acceptance.
Yeah.
That's the pressure they're feeling.
Has there been any progress in those talks with PEF over the last few days? Are you making any headway, or are they pretty much where they've been for several weeks or maybe months?
You know, Fred, it's basically binary, right? We are where we are. $450 million, that number doesn't change. The fact that CSEA accepted the contract adds to the credibility of the offer, so that's not going to change. And if they don't want to accept the offer that CSEA accepted, then there's going to have to be layoffs. Yeah. It's up to them.
Governor, let me ask.
I can argue it either way. If their workforce says we'd rather lay off people than accept these terms, you know, I understand that.
Although, arguably, and I would think you would make this point, it would be better for the state to retain the workers so they can do the jobs that they're supposed to be doing rather than have those positions eliminated and presumably the services that go with them disappear as well.
From my point of view, from the state's point of view, we don't want to do any layoffs. The last resort, and it's an undesirable resort. The union would have to say, we would rather do layoffs and lay off our own members than agree to a contract.
Yep.
They would have to say that.
Governor, let me ask you a quick couple of environmental-related questions, if I could. The DEC last week came out with a report on hydrofracking. that said under certain circumstances, a hydrofracking could go ahead, carefully regulated, could be done safely in the southern tier of the Marcellus Shale area. You have yet to personally weigh in as a period of review of comments. Eventually, you'll make a decision. But I wonder about the reaction to the report. Has it been more negative from the public at large than you would have expected, or less negative? What kind of reaction have you gotten, and was it consistent with what you had anticipated?
Look, I think it was a balanced approach, and when you have a balanced approach, you normally have problems from both extremes. You have some people who just are against any drilling, period. So obviously they're not pleased. And you have some business types who believe, you know, it should be the Wild West, and they should be able to drill when and where they want to without any government interference or regulation, and they're displeased. I think it was a smart and thorough report. The process has to conclude. The public comment is important, but I think it was a balanced approach. I think it understands the approach said we have to protect the environment, and we have to progress from an economic point of view, and we need energy. You know, candles really aren't going to work long term. So I think it's been a balanced approach, but we're going to let the process continue.
When would you think you would be in a position to render a decision? I think environmentalists and others, those who are against hydrofracking, would hope for as long a delay as possible. Those who would like, landowners in the southern tier area, others interested parties would like to have it as fast as possible. When do you think you'll be in a position to render a final decision?
You know, it's not me, Fred. It's the, however, whatever the process takes, the public comment period is important.
That's 60 days beginning August 1, is that right?
Yeah. And
but the one thing that everyone can always say about David is that he's a nice guy. He's the kind, he certainly doesn't come across with the arrogance of a wiener, but very frank.
Or we've made it burdensome. I think DEC is doing a very good job at moving the process accordingly. And if it's 60 days of public comment, it's 60 days.
Would you think then before the end of the year, by sure, there should be a final decision?
Yeah, I don't know, Fred, what the clock is after the public comment period. I know they respond to the public comment. I don't know how long that takes. From a factual basis, I don't know.
Just quickly, there's a report that the New York Times got a hold of that was prepared, I guess, for the city of New York or for Mayor Bloomberg on Indian Point, saying how difficult it would be to shut down, to find alternative power sources. 25 or 30% of the power for New York City comes from there. That shutting Indian Point down would increase pollution, not decrease it. And it made some other observations about how difficult it would be to close Indian Point, something you've called for. What did you make of the report? And you know, is there some merit to the concerns about doing that?
The report was done for the city, and I understand the city is against closing Indian Point. And I understand the arguments for keeping Indian Point open. And there's similarities between Indian Point, Fred, and the hydrofracking discussion. They both have the common denominator of we need energy sources, right? That's present in both. And they are both dealing with the question of safety and economics versus the environment. In the case of Indian Point, I have always believed that the risk, the safety risk, outweighs the economic and operational benefit. And I've always, this is nothing new, this is not because of the recent nuclear disaster. I've always said that. And depending on whose numbers you want to use in terms of what percent of energy capacity, is it 15, is it 20, I've always said that you have to find replacement sources on the same theory. Candles don't work long term. You can't just close it without having identified a replacement source, but that you could identify a replacement source if you wanted to. There's something called conservation. There's something called letting the state actually pass a siting law, which we did do.
Right, the Article 10.
That it was held up for.
We only have about a minute remaining, a minute and a half, Governor, just FYI.
So, but just on the balance, Fred, I believe you can find the replacement power. Of course, you would have to find the replacement power. Otherwise, just closing it would be irresponsible.
Governor, I had hoped to give you time to talk about your agenda. You've accomplished so much in the view of virtually everybody, whether it was a property tax cap or same-sex marriage or ethics reforms, to talk about your agenda for down the road. Some would argue you've already accomplished most of what you had promised. But we're out of time, so maybe I can invite you to come back sometime. We'd love to have you back again to discuss that. And let me thank you this morning for joining us.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, Governor. It was a very interesting, gentle colloquy, some would say. This is Fred Dicker live at the State Capitol. My thanks to the Governor, of course, to Randy Credico, most importantly to all of you for joining us this morning. Have a wonderful weekend. I'll be back here on Monday. Hope you will be as well. Until then, bye-bye.